From Williamsport to St. Mary's, Everett to Elizabethtown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it is almost time for Governor Tom Wolf to deliver his annual budget address to the legislature. Which taxes will he want to raise and how much more will he want to spend? David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Matt Briette of the Commonwealth Partners are here for a Capitol Watch discussion. And speaking of raising taxes, the Wolf administration has put Pennsylvania into a multi-state agreement that would raise gas and diesel taxes to pay for more public transportation and other so-called environmental projects. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. This is not a legislative election year in Pennsylvania, but there are three vacant seats in the General Assembly, which will be filled in special elections that will take place this spring. In the State House, the 114th district seat in Lackawanna County was left vacant by the death last fall of State Representative Sid Kovulik. Nominees for the Republican and Democratic parties will be selected according to party rules. So far, three Republicans are vying for the nomination, which will be determined in a party convention on January 17th. Four Democrats are seeking their party's nomination. Kovulik was a Democrat, and the special election will be held March 12th to fill the remainder of his two-year term. The same day, there will be a special election to fill the seat left vacant by the resignation of former state representative Vanessa Lowry Brown. Brown resigned in the wake of her conviction on bribery charges. The seat is in the city of Philadelphia, so the Democratic nominee will be the heavy favorite to win. The third special election will be for the 37th state Senate district seat, centered in Allegheny County. That vacancy occurred when Guy Reschenthaler resigned to take his seat in Congress that he won in last November's election. This will be a highly competitive race, as it is a district that has swung back and forth between the two parties in recent years. At least three Republicans and five Democrats have already expressed an interest in being nominated for that seat. As with special elections for the State House, nominees for the special state Senate election will be selected according to their respective party rules. And the break from congressional elections was short-lived. Former Lehigh County Commissioner Dean Browning last week filed paperwork to raise money to run for the Republican nomination in the 7th District. That seat was won last November by freshman Congresswoman Susan Wild. Brown is already attacking Wild for being a, quote, extreme liberal, citing her vote to make Nancy Pelosi Speaker of the House as an example. Wild defeated Marty Northstein last year to win that seat in Congress. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. In his first budget address, Governor Tom Wolf proposed tax hikes greater than those proposed in the other 49 states combined. Last year, he asked for little in the way of new taxes and spending. So which Wolf will take to the State House podium next month? Here with a Capitol Watch preview are David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Matt Briette from the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me on the show today, Matt Briette, President and CEO of the Commonwealth Partners, the Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks so much for being with me.
Hey, good to be with you, David.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you, too. And it's Groundhog Day is coming up, and with it, the annual budget address, which of course is the beginning of the whole season that runs through almost always to the end of the fiscal year on June 30, if not beyond. And so the governor, Tom Wolf, having been reelected, that he will have another shot at laying out a proposal for state spending.
Yes. And I guess the question is, which Tom Wolf will we get? Because, of course, his first year in office, elected in 2014, he came in March of 2015, proposed the single largest tax increase in the country.
About $5 billion?
Yeah, which was more than every other state combined. And that's when we ended up having, you'll recall, David, our pregnancy budget.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it took 9 months
to finally get a budget.
That's right. And thankfully, he got absolutely nothing in terms of his tax increases, which in a way, I think probably contributed to his reelection because he didn't get what he wanted.
Yes.
So we saved him from himself in some regards because, well, of course, then he campaigned certainly as a more moderate candidate and even as a business governor, which I know you, representing many businesses in the state, might disagree
yes,
with him.
My favorite was in his campaign ads where he took credit for the expiration of the capital stock and franchise tax, which was already on the books that he literally all he had to do was nothing. And so very much like the rooster taking credit for the sunrise that the governor made that claim.
Well, it it certainly worked. In fact, I mean, as I heard from people during the campaign that might see clips from campaign ads, they seemed to buy his narrative. He certainly had no qualms about taking credit for the sun rising in the East once again.
Knowing him and his record, I think that there are a certain number of his greatest hits, things that he's called for in previous budgets but didn't get, that he'll come back around to again. And, you know, top of that list would be to impose a new additional tax on natural gas production in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's one that I'm certain is going to come about because we're probably looking about a $1.5 billion deficit, meaning the last budget that they put together is not going to have recurring revenues to keep up pace with the spending increases, even with a booming economy because of the Jobs and Tax Cut Act in Washington. It's still not producing enough revenue to meet the spending habits of Harrisburg. And so the governor is going to be looking for revenue. He's certainly going to be tackling energy. And interestingly, just days before the election, he was opposed to recreational marijuana in Pennsylvania. But then days afterward, he's for it, which I think is probably a precursor to how he thinks he can fill coming holes in the budget is just, get more marijuana flowing in Pennsylvania.
Well, and so before I go back and I want to do chapter and verse for the listeners on why a new additional energy tax would just be profoundly self-defeating for Pennsylvania and completely unjust and uncalled for, I do want to make mention, not only about this, let's have recreational marijuana so we can tax it, so we can pay for government. Pennsylvania is very heavily over-reliant on sin taxes. Yeah. And that in particular, the gambling money, Pennsylvania's budget is actually dangerously over-reliant on the revenues from the losses of gamblers at Pennsylvania casinos and with the lottery and such. And so,
but that's how we get all the property tax relief that we're feeling right now, David. So if you don't have slot machines and gaming table, yeah, saying that tongue in cheek, of course, because that money hasn't been reducing our property taxes. I don't think anybody has experienced a reduction. Only increases. So we tend to be sold a bill of goods on these things, whether it's expanded gambling or higher tax. We pay them amongst the highest taxes or the highest tax for alcohol in the state. So and of course in cigarettes, all of those things. So these are things that end up becoming declining revenues or not enough to meet the promises made by politicians.
Yes. So getting back to the governor's monomania on a new additional tax on natural gas production. What is the total cost of doing business in one jurisdiction versus another? And Pennsylvania is a very expensive place to do business. And that Pennsylvania, like just to put it in context, that the governor likes to say that we should have this new additional tax, which he calls a severance tax, because Texas has a severance tax. Okay, fine. Let's take that at face value. Well, Texas also does not have a corporate net income tax. Pennsylvania has the highest flat tax in the country at 9.99%. So Pennsylvania 9.99, Texas 0. Pennsylvania has a personal income tax. Texas does not. Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas has enacted meaningful limits on lawsuit abuse. Texas has a mature industry with a stable regulatory climate that you can get a permit in one business day in Texas, where in Pennsylvania you'll wait for 3 months, and that's if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. Texas has hundreds of billions of dollars of state-of-the-art infrastructure in the ground, where here in Pennsylvania we're just trying to lay out the first major arteries and connect them together. And beyond that, Pennsylvania also has a unique in the nation impact fee that other states don't have. So this relentless drive that that we need to treat this natural gas industry like a beast of burden to be whipped is just profoundly wrongheaded. This opportunity is the best shot Pennsylvania has had at broad-based economic growth, because of course we all need energy. Energy is life. It powers our homes, but it also powers our economy. And on behalf of manufacturers, who add the most value, our industry has the strongest multiplier effect on job creation. Manufacturers need energy, and lots of it. And so this is our shot to give Pennsylvania a real competitive advantage, an actual economic reason to come here, locate here, operate, expand, hire, to do that here in Pennsylvania rather than someplace else. So the idea that we're going to just, take this opportunity and bleed it for more government is just foolish and wrong.
Well, or the notion that we can just stick it to the gas industry when, in fact, we're sticking it to ourselves. Because at the end of the day, this hits us in the bottom line of our utility bills. If you increase the cost of utilizing natural gas, it's going to show up in your utility bills. And so the idea that you can stick it to a business far and away, you're really hurting yourself. And there's also the inconsistency, David, of saying, you know what, because this industry is making money, that they owe us something. You don't hear Governor Wolf, who made a lot of money off of lumber with his cabinet, saying we need a severance tax on timber in Pennsylvania, which we don't have.
Correct.
But somehow there is, he's not scrambling for that. It's just the natural gas industry that has been targeted unfairly when, as you've noted, they're already paying additional taxes on top of the ones that everybody else is paying.
And one thing more, the argument that we need to have this tax in Pennsylvania because other states have it. In other states, in every state that has a one of these taxes, it has an abatement period, which means we recognize that there's a cost of making the initial investment, and therefore there's a window of time at the start during which this tax is not owed. The proposals in Harrisburg for having this tax in Pennsylvania do not have that abatement on it. So it's like so we can have this tax because it's like everybody else. They give us a tax that no other state has. It's just it's insulting, it's dishonest, and it has to be stopped.
Well, and it's really driven, David, at the end of the day, the inability to curtail spending and the insatiable demand for higher taxes and the need to fund government. And so instead of thinking logically on these policies and the harmful impacts that these things will have, they seem to be blinded by those, just the drive for more money, and ignore what will clearly be negative impacts upon really working Pennsylvanians.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Matt Briett from Commonwealth Partners. I'm sure that there'll be a call for a higher government-mandated minimum wage.
Yeah, and this is where it's really sad, because the governor claims that this will help the poor, that this will elevate people out of poverty if we increase the artificial floor for wages. But the reality is that when you increase the cost of labor at the lowest level, you're going to destroy jobs for the people who need them most, the unskilled, the uneducated. Really, it's that first rung on the economic ladder. You just make it much higher for people to be able to start to climb the ladder of success. And so this is where, you know, it's sound bites. I'm sure he'll have, you know, somebody who's working two or three jobs, not able to make ends meet. And we certainly want to make sure that they have economic opportunity. But you do that by creating more jobs in the marketplace, not fewer. And even every study that's out there, even those from the left or labor economists, recognize there is a destruction of jobs. And it is certainly destroying those entry-level jobs that serve as that first rung for climbing the ladder of success.
That's true. And, you know, in the same way that these, you know, that a new higher energy tax will, you know, jack up the bills of all households and have the biggest impact on the people who can least afford it, the same is true, perhaps especially so, when talking about the government-mandated minimum wage. And one of the problems that we're experiencing just as an economy, as a business community, is we're finding it increasingly difficult to find qualified new hires. We're at a point where there are more job openings in the economy than there are people who are looking for work. And that one of the problems that we have is this it's a cultural problem. It's the, you know, finding people who are able to show up on time and put in a full day and not mouth off to the supervisor and not scare the customers. And, you know, part of this, I'm convinced, is that because of the ever increasing, you know, the government mandated minimum wage, which is eliminating those jobs, that people are delayed in having their first contact with the economy, that, you know, that rather than having your paper route or, you know, being a burger flipper or wherever that thing is where you get started when you're 14, 15, 16, that the fewer of those jobs are available, the longer it is until somebody has that first entry into the workforce, and therefore they're less acculturated to the internal discipline of being able to be successful in a private sector job.
Yeah, I mean, the ripple effects of it, David, are significant because we know the benefits of compounding interest. It's the same when you delay making those kinds of investments, whether it's financially or in your own career development, work development.
Social capital.
That's right. That's the negative part. But David, you know, these are the things that we know the governor's going to propose. I'd like to, you know, throw out things that he should be doing that unfortunately I don't think we're going to hear from him. And there are two things that would really address what I think he at least wants to with a minimum wage, and that's how do we lift people out of poverty? One of the things is some welfare reform where he has twice vetoed important legislation that would really help move people from dependence and poverty to independence and prosperity, in that by having work requirements, we have seen this in states that have implemented it. People not only improve their own lives on their own, they actually far exceed what they would have been making, quote unquote, making, staying on welfare.
Right.
He's not going to be proposing this. And this is something, David, that you've got exponential growth in government spending there. Our revenues will not keep up. So you have to have reforms. Otherwise, you're going to have to keep demanding higher taxes.
Yes. And the governor has vetoed these very minimal requirements, which is that for people who are receiving the health care assistance through the Medicaid program, that they need to either be working, to be seeking work, to be going to school to get the skills that would make them employable, or to be dedicating a certain number of hours to volunteer work. And of course, you know, the governor and his allies say, well, this is, you know, this is mean.
Draconian.
Yeah,
I mean, it's,
yeah, yeah.
And this is for people who are able-bodied.
Correct.
They don't have any dependents.
Right.
So they
and
are
no
clearly,
disabilities. So these
that's
are
right.
working age, able-bodied
yes.
people without dependents. And that this was the Obamacare population to which, you know, Medicaid was extended. And the fact is that that the longer you're on the sidelines, the longer you're out of work, that the more that your skills degrade and the harder it is to re-enter the workforce, that actually having these requirements to get people in motion, that is what will ultimately render them more likely to render them employable.
And it's, you know, it's the other side of that coin, David, that I know you're aware of, and it's the education side of the coin that unfortunately he's not going to address. All he's going to say is, look, we need more money in public education, despite being in the top 10 per pupil in the country. He's not going to unfortunately be talking about alternative paths, means by which students can actually access a higher quality education at a lower cost to the taxpayers, whether it's expanding our education improvement tax credit or opportunity scholarship tax credit that is serving thousands of kids, but really could be serving hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of kids outside of the traditional public school model. But with the PSEA, the teacher union being one of the biggest campaign contributors, unfortunately, I don't expect him to be talking about those types of true reforms that are going to serve kids better and actually provide them with the education that that many people trapped in our welfare system lack.
But until then, want to give the listeners more places to go to get information and insights. Matt, where can people go to learn more about you and the work of your organization?
Yeah, the best place is go facebook.com/Commonwealth Partners.
Outstanding. And as ever, people can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Network, Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So from Matt and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Pennsylvania motorists already pay one of the highest state gasoline taxes in the nation, thanks to what was effectively a 30-cent per gallon gas tax hike during the Tom Corbett administration. Now, a new multi-state compact advocated by radical environmental interests threatens to add to that tax burden. As with most policies pushed by the left, this one has a lofty-sounding name. It is called the Transportation and Climate Initiative. Its goal is to ratchet up the war on carbon-based fuels by setting new goals for the reduction of their use. And of course, there is the usual tug at the heartstrings rhetoric as the initiative seeks to, quote, maximize environmental, economic, social, and public health benefits. If you cut through all the spin, what is actually being proposed is a tax grab to fund dubious low-carbon technologies, which cannot compete in the marketplace because they are ineffective, overly expensive, or both, and, surprise, redirect more money to urban mass transit systems. As Inconvenient Facts author Greg Wrightstone puts it, they want to take money from Perry County, rural Pennsylvania, and give it to Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. As Wrightstone explained the compact on a recent edition of Lincoln Radio Journal, the Wolf administration has entered into an agreement with nine other, mostly northeastern states, to cap each of the state's carbon emissions from transportation, meaning your car. The states have 1 year to come up with a plan. Such plans will most certainly include additional taxes on gasoline and diesel fuel. Then, Wrightstone concluded, the money will be redistributed to low-carbon transportation systems. In other words, urban mass transit. Those urban transportation systems, specifically the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority, or SEPTA, in the Philadelphia region, and Port Authority Transit, PAT, in the Pittsburgh area, have an insatiable appetite for public dollars and annually develop new schemes to fleece taxpayers from other regions to subsidize the many and well-documented inefficiencies and outright corruption that regularly plague those agencies. Thus, the lofty-sounding Transportation and Climate Initiative allows Governor Wolf to advance two of his top agenda items, establish a new revenue stream to keep mass transit afloat, and penalize users of carbon-based fuels. Keep in mind, those users include you every time you start your car or use a product that was delivered to the store by motor vehicle, which is to say, everything. In addition to the cost to consumers, higher taxes on gasoline and diesel fuel will increase the cost of doing business for companies based in Pennsylvania. This will put them at a competitive disadvantage with states that are not part of this ideologically driven compact. Notably, the state of Ohio declined to participate in the boondoggle, correctly seizing an opportunity to gain a competitive edge over Pennsylvania-based businesses. All of this raises the issue of how new and higher taxes will be imposed. Since this is an administrative agreement, it is entirely possible, even likely, the Wolf administration will attempt to bypass the General Assembly and impose the new cost as a regulatory fee. There are many reasons to believe the governor will try that route. First, with Republicans in control of both houses of the General Assembly, the chance of winning legislative approval for a fuel tax increase, especially in the House, are slim to none. Second, the General Assembly has a recent history of allowing its constitutional authority to be usurped by other branches of government without putting up an effective fight. For example, last year, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, in a clear violation of the state constitution, abrogated the legislature's power to draw congressional district lines and instituted by judicial fiat a new congressional district map gerrymandered to favor Democrats. Legislative Republicans howled in protest, even appealed to the federal courts, but they failed to take the one action that would have been effective: impeach the offending justices, especially the one who, in a blatant breach of judicial ethics, campaigned on doing exactly what was done. So Governor Wolf can be forgiven if he believes he can impose an entire new layer of taxation on we, the people of Penn's Woods, without the legislature taking any effective action to stop him. But this is an issue where legislative leaders, particularly those in the state Senate, need to stiffen their spines and take a stand. The policy goals of the Transportation and Climate Initiative are dubious at best. This is a clear tax grab for urban mass transit, and consumers are already overburdened when it comes to gas and fuel taxes. Even for the legislative faint of heart, this is a battle worth fighting. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WGGY and WGGI-FM in Pittston, along with WIOV-AM and WEEU-AM in Reading, Pennsylvania. And it is time to talk about the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. This year is the 30th anniversary Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. It will be held April 5th and 6th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Wall Street Journal columnist and commentator Kimberly Strassel. As usual, there will be numerous speakers, panel presentations on key state and national issues, workshops, and the opportunity to network with conservatives from across the state. To learn more and to register for the 2019 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to PALeadershipConference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.